Blog Talk Radio.
This is Monica Liel welcoming you to the LL Research Radio Program In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. Today is Friday, March 5th, 2013. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Jim McCarty is Carla's husband, the scribe for the Ra Contact, and president of LL Research. Please visit the websites llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more. And the community website, bringforth.org, that's bring, the number 4, th.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. I'll be asking Carla and Jim questions that come from you. If you would like to ask a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Liel, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty of LL Research. Hey, Carla and Jim. How are you doing today?
Hey, we're hanging right in there. We got some good news today, Monica.
Okay, what?
Finally, the third time they've scheduled our operation, my operation, for the 26th of April, which is way better than we had hoped for.
Oh, okay. I was thinking
I wrote
it was
them a
like
letter. I said, I beg you, please don't make us wait 2 months like you did last time, because this is, you know, a difficulty for me.
And yeah,
absolutely. They responded. They really did. I was so thrilled that they did.
They had to cancel the 9th because one of the surgeons was going to be out of town, so we didn't know what was going to happen after that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. I had thought it was going to be the 9th. So, okay, so that means we'll be doing the show next week?
Yeah.
We will.
Okay, very
Praise
good.
The Lord.
Wonderful.
Yeah,
well,
it's been a wild week because I was so disappointed, and now I just feel so incredibly pleased that this
happened.
Well,
great. I'm happy for you.
Yeah, I am too. Thank you so much. How are things with you, girl?
Doing good. Doing good. Busy, but doing good. Can't complain.
That Russell is Mickey. I don't know what he's got, the phone in his pocket or what. I'm not sure. Mickey, take the phone out of your pocket, sweetheart. Oh, dear.
Can't hear you. Ah, there we go.
Mick? Nope.
Sorry about that. I had to put the cat out.
Take the phone out. Oh, you got your phone out. Good. We heard you all the way. Russell. What is he doing? Okay, well, you can see we're having a good time as usual.
Absolutely. Well, I'm really happy that you got everything worked out. I know you were really anxious to get that done.
I still am, but, you know, to have a date to settle on and focus on, and it's so much, you know, there are so many people that would like to send absent healing and pray, and it's so much easier when you've got a focus for that. And you can say, okay, well, be with you on the 26th of April, you know, and not just in general. So it's
okay.
A great blessing.
Well, we have a few questions for tonight, and then I think we will be at the end of the backlog of questions. So since we will have probably a couple more shows before your big day, then I want to let everybody know we need questions. So if anybody
I heard from Fakisha, who is an old friend of LNL Research. She wrote in and said how much she enjoyed calling in, and she doesn't want to ask questions. She's just listening on her phone. So
okay.
Hey,
no problem.
Patricia, I'm so glad to have you with us, and you don't have to ask a question at all. Just enjoy listening. And I love you so much. I'm so glad to get that note from you and know that it's you on the line. All right.
Okay. The opening riff for tonight is from Kuo, December 21st, 2003. This instrument meditates on behalf of peace each night, and one of the keys to understanding peace, the concept of peace as a living thing and not as a dead idea, is to realize that peace is the complete and harmonious integration of light and dark, so that all is in balance within the whole entity and all of that entity's faculties are brought to bear on a situation, not simply those faculties towards the good, but those faculties that might be considered towards the negative. For the thief, the coveter, the lazy one, all of those dark voices within can be charmed into becoming the bedrock of will that puts grit into the expression of love that the light part of self has no trouble expressing. Yet when the going gets rough, it is that dark side of self that is able to take hold in difficult situations and endure. That same darkness that could be the wolf that bites then has become the best support possible for the light. And this is the hoped-for result of an incarnation full of both the light and the dark as the seasons revolve and as the seasons of inner life revolve as well. So we take this opportunity to praise the dark as well as the light and to ask each of you to work on embracing all parts of the self, loving, honoring, and respecting each, and finding ways each day to come into more conscious harmony of being. And as you're able to find your kingdom within, becoming peaceable, just to that extent shall you be able to be a force for peace to those about you. No matter how you strive, if you do not embrace the dark side of self, you shall ever be less of a messenger for peace and more of a voice that has not the force and directness to project into the earth plane with all of its inner planes of energy.
Thank you, Monica. There's always been a question with anyone who thinks about peace as to what it is. Because if you ask a soldier what peace is, it's a matter of not shooting people. When people put guns down, that's peace. And we all know that that's not at all peace. Okay, if peace can't be described by the absence of actual violence, what is peace? What is it to be at peace within? Is any of us at peace today? Totally at peace. Mick and I started a long time ago to pray to Gaia, or Gaia, it depends on to whom you speak as to how you pronounce that beautiful term for Mother Nature. However you pronounce Gaia, we call it Gaia. We had a friend, Bruce Perrette, who got in touch with me back in 2001. Yeah. Over 10 years ago now. And it was just 3 weeks before 9-1-1. It was in the summertime. He was very upset. Now, this is a guy that had retreated to the wilds of Wyoming and created a ranch for himself at the end of a 40-mile driveway. It wasn't all his driveway. I mean, it hooked up with other rock surface roads, but it was 40 miles before you hit a county road that was paved. And it was longer than that before you got to a place where you could lay in groceries and so forth. So he was truly out there in Mother Nature. And he was happy there. He built a bermed house, that is, you did not see it when you came upon it because it was underground. He had simply dug down into the earth and made his household underground. And all you could see was a mound of earth that was his roof. That was Bruce. And Bruce was proud of saying that on his acreage, the wolf truly lay down with the lamb. Nobody was allowed to kill anybody. Everybody was at peace. And he created that and made it happen out of the desires of his own nature. And it seemed to be true as long as he lived there that he didn't find carcasses the way you usually do, the way nature does. You know, a turkey buzzard will go after something that's newly dead or just about to die, or, you know, a wolf will go after a small animal, a fox will go after your chickens. It's just, it's part of life in the country. And on Bruce's land, this just didn't happen. All right. So that was Bruce. He was a big man. He smiled a lot. He enjoyed people, but he liked being alone, too. And as a scientist, he found that he was able to get work. He did work on old computers. He was an expert on bringing older computers into compliancy with newer stuff with the least possible expenditure of money. Hospitals loved him. Schools loved him. And he was always going somewhere for a certain period of time and renovating their computer system and then going back to his farm and living for months on what he had made. So he wrote me an email and he said, "Mother is not talking to me." And I asked her why, and she said that nobody was listening to her anymore. And she did not see that there was any point in continuing to converse with humans because nobody cared for nature anymore. He said, "Please do something. I don't know who to ask, but I'm asking you." So Jim and I talked about it, and we decided to institute the Gaia Meditations. And we have them every night at 9 o'clock when we at the end of this program, when we get off, we will have a Gaia Meditation here. And we do every night. We're very faithful about it. And people all over the world have a Gaia Meditation. And a lot of them just have it at 9 o'clock their time, which is fine. It doesn't have to be all at once in terms of space-time. It's the energy of intention that brings everybody together as one big lighthouse. At any rate, we did that, and 3 weeks later, 911 happened, and our conjecture is that since things are known in the spirit world long before they are manifested in the space-time continuum of our reality, our consensus reality, that terrible shock had occurred, and that was what had prompted the big turnaround with Mother Nature. So since that time, I'm happy to say that we have gotten letters from probably half a dozen psychics saying thank you. The most important thing, single thing that you all do is hold the Gaia Meditation. It has made all the difference, literally all the difference in the world. Gaia is still talking to us because you cared enough to put aside the time and to ask everybody else to put aside the time. Simply, even if it's, you know, 2 minutes or 5 minutes, to sit there and thank Mother for the breath that we have, and the water that runs in our streams, and the air we breathe, and the beauty of the flowers in the spring, and the gorgeous dignity of the trees in the wintertime with the ice on them shining like a palace. There is no time in the year that there is no beauty. Mother Nature is absolutely gorgeous, and we have so much to thank her for. We have everything to thank her for. We're creatures of the earth. We're made out of the stuff of earth, the elements of the earth, and the blood that runs in our veins moves to the tides, the same rhythm as the tides move to. We're mostly seawater, salt water in our veins, and we have everything to thank Gaia for. So we think about peace every night, Jim and I do, and so many people have been kind enough to come with us and have that vision of a of a continuing conversation with Mother to thank her for so many things. So what is peace? Peace, says Kuo, and of course Kuo is Ra and Lachui and Hetan all together. That's the principle of Kuo. That's what makes them up. One from the density of love, one from the density of wisdom, and one from the density of unity. It says that you can't have peace in yourself until you have found all of yourself and acknowledged it and brought it into the light and asked it to work for you. And I think that you see so many people that have almost no ability to withstand evil. And they go immediately to violence. I want to kill that person that did that. I want to destroy. I want to fight. And there's that in us. And I feel that just like anybody else. And through the years, I've spent time asking that violence within me to work with me and to become that which withstands the violence that it sees. And instead of losing my head over it and resisting it, going face to face with it, because you can't win if you resist evil. Instead of doing that, I try to spend the time asking that energy, that wolf that bites that is within me, to back me up so that when I see the blackness in someone around me or in a situation, in a human situation or in a situation that happens to our nation state, that I have the ability to withstand and to bear it and to abide it, not resisting it, but maintaining an open heart in the face of it and looking at it face to face with love in my heart. It is a way of tears and sorrow, but those tears are not tears of weakness. Certainly, my own nature is such that I will go way out of my way to avoid argument and debate. I'm not fond of it at all. My father was. I know how to do it. I'm good at it. I dislike it intensely. To me, the energies that a lawyer prides himself upon and that my father always prided himself on are basically energies of pushing and shoving and bullying people with words. No, you're not taking up swords. No, you're not hitting somebody with a stick. But you're using words to win points off of the other guy and to get your way. And maybe that's a good thing. Certainly people need defending when they've been wronged. And where would we be without good defensive lawyers? But you could take a clever defensive lawyer, and if you have money enough to hire him, he can employ all of his tricks, and we've seen it again and again, get people off or get them off with an extremely light and unfair judgment because he has money enough to pay for it. And that, too, is enough to make you furious. It's enough to want to make you, you know, you have that feeling. But the essence of being able to deal with life on this earth is that ability to see those things in yourself without judgment, but with the simple request, please come into the light. I love you, and I know you're part of me, and I need you to work for me. I need you to help me be tough, really tough, and to be able to continue in my quest to allow the light to rule my world inside me, regardless of what it does outside of me. That's what we have control over. That is the essence of choice. We have the choice at all times whether we're going to let go and be furious and make a fist and punch and shove and make a difference that way. Somehow we've, you know, we've indicated that we are strong. But you see, when you give away your power in a foolish expression, that does not bring any true peace. What brings true peace is to be able to look at it and find the grit and the toughness within yourself to continue to love it. Oh, it's hard. Oh, it's very hard. And many is the time that I fail. But I know it can be done, and I know that there is a tremendous amount of wisdom in the effort to do it. And I encourage you all this evening to take heed. I'll read these words again. We take this opportunity to praise the dark as well as the light, and to ask each of you to work on embracing all parts of yourself, loving, honoring, and respecting each, finding ways each day to come into more conscious harmony of being. To the extent that you find your kingdom within being peaceable, just to that extent shall you be able to be a force for peace to those about you. If you do not embrace the dark side of self, you shall be another person that sings, "We shall overcome," and then has no alternative when brought beyond words by an injustice to the violence of fist and gun. So, Monica, blessings to all. It's a difficult thing to find true peace, but I honestly believe this is the way. And I believe that I have found it more than most.
Well, that's wonderful. Carla, thank you for sharing all that. Jim, did you have anything to add to that?
Oh, one small thing. I think that a lot of people would like to have peace descend upon them so that they could live a peace-filled life without really having to work for it. But I think that most of us are going to have to go through the process of discovering the lack of peace or the tendency towards frustration or anger. And maybe even some people would have to confrontation and all of this in order to discover that peace is really the way we want to go. And I think that the measure of peace within any soul is what happens when we, in this spontaneous moment, how we respond in a situation where maybe one person would respond with anger or frustration, and another person with love and acceptance. It's a difficult thing. We have to go through the fires, I think, ourselves, and to discover this in ourselves, we frequently will fail, and we'll discover that there is this tendency towards violence within us, this tendency towards anger and separation and criticism and so forth. And it'll take a while before we're able to balance ourselves in such a way that the first thing that comes out of our responses and out of our hearts and out of our mouths in such a situation will be a tendency towards peace and reconciliation and harmony. And I think the difficult road is the road that teaches us the most clearly about what peace is and about how it abides in us through our own efforts of working towards it.
And as we are working towards it, was it Ra that gave the technique? I think Kuo gave a technique as well for accepting the so-called negative emotions. I mean, I noticed that you contrasted anger and frustration versus love and peace, seeming to indicate that those are negative. And yet sometimes in an effort to achieve that peace, people suppress the anger. They bottle it up inside think, you know, and on the surface, everything's all peachy, but inside, they're
inside,
still seething.
Yeah. And inside seething. Is where the struggle is. It's in terms of living a spiritual life, it's never out there. It's always inside. And you really are the only one that knows the full story of what you think and what you feel and how much you can forgive. And as much as I've been angry at people, what I am able to do for the most part, if I can get in there and really meditate on it and muse upon it and consider it, you know, for a while, I come to find that I'm upset about that in myself, not in the other person. That what I see outside of myself is only painful to me because there's an answering energy in me that's exactly like that and would like to answer violence with violence, anger with anger, ugliness with ugliness. I know that I think I mentioned on a recent show that we at Jim and I decided to sell some land in the country because in asking our neighbors to respect our privacy and not use their ATVs on our land because they were using them on our access road and it was making it crumble and it was destroying it. And, you know, it's just sort of etched out of the side of a ravine. So, you know, it's the only way to get into the land. And things had gotten bad and the neighbors were intransigent. They disliked us. They thought that we were jerks. And we started to try to get that driveway declared for ourselves because we put thousands into it over a period of over 20 years now, and nobody's put anything else into it at all. We tried once before years ago, and we were able only to have a judgment that it was not a public road, that the county did not want it. And so it was a right-of-way, basically, and it was not a deeded right-of-way. It was the kind of right-of-way that everybody has. If there's no other way to get into a property, you will be allowed a right-of-way, and you can use it. But we were trying in this lawsuit simply to let that be ours, and the law was on our side. And we quickly discovered that just like everything else in that particular county, in the rural Kentucky, and I won't mention it because it's rude to say things, even if they're true, when you're saying that they're less than honest. If you've ever read The Cornbread Mafia, it talks about how the politics are just crooked, you know, and if you're a crony, then, you know, there's no such thing as a police report. And there's even one story of, you know, finally, someone was able to evict a tenant that refused to leave after, I don't know, years of struggle. But the day after the tenant left, the house was burned to the ground. You know, oh, well, maybe we didn't want that guy to leave after all, you know. So we looked at the ugliness before us, and we decided to walk away. We decided rather than locking horns with these people, we would put the land up for sale and walk away. And it's been a blessing to us. We felt a lot of grace from that decision. We haven't sold the land yet, and it could be that, you know, we'll have difficulty selling it, but I doubt it because it's good hunting land, and there are a lot of people around there that love to hunt. So I think probably it will revert to people that enjoy hunting. But at any rate, you know, we were able once more to test, well, can I see these people with love in my heart? And I can tell you that it took a lot of work. It took a lot of work. And but I was able to do it, to do everything that I did without separating from them in my heart. And just like the times that I've done that before, it stretches you, and I think it makes you grow. So it's always within you, Monica. It's never a question of, well, how do you respond outwardly. It's a question of what's going on in your heart. Is your heart closing or is it staying open? Are you using your energy to separate yourself from people or to include everybody? And that's the only way I think that I can judge for myself what I'm doing. And a lot of times I see my heart closing up pretty smartly and have to go right to work.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that for sure. When I mentioned about the superficial, you know, being nice on the outside, I was referring to, you know, how sometimes people give a big smile and they're all nicey-nicey on the outside, but deep mm-hmm. inside they're you know, they don't
curious.
Like the person. They
yeah.
have a lot of anger, whatever. But I guess it just has to do with being, you know, really being honest with themselves and being in tune with that.
There's a lot of that. And I think one great thing about the Law of One, and this is a Law of One show, and I'm talking not just for myself, but also as somebody that really admires the Law of One. If all things are one, then that attitude of being honest with yourself, knowing yourself, is the start of everything. You know yourself, accept yourself, become the creator. I think Don was asking how to become a more magical personality, wasn't that it? And, you know, it gave that very simple, know yourself, accept yourself, and become the creator. Now, I haven't gotten anywhere on becoming the creator yet. I'm working on accepting myself. And that's really what peace is all about, is when you find yourself, when you find a part of yourself that is getting dark, then you are honest with yourself, and you're honest with other people. You know, you don't do that. You don't lie. You find a way, a nice way, a loving way of telling the truth. And Jim has always said that's one of my specialities, is finding a way to tell the truth in situations that there doesn't seem to be any nice way to bring harmony to a situation. But I believe it always can be done if you can just stay honest and stay loving.
Now that brings up a question. How do you know when to speak up and speak the truth and when not to, because it might offend the person, or, you know, is it a violation of their free will to say something?
Well, I think that the question of violating somebody else's free will is, I mean, you can't really violate their free will if you're just giving your opinion, because you're not hurting them. I mean, unless you intend to hurt them. I think it's all in the intention. If I have a loving intention to share honestly with somebody, and he's pushing me for a reason, he's pushing me, you know, I mean, this is not a way which you take the initiative. This is when somebody comes to you, the situation comes to you, or that person comes to you, and you are pretty well forced to express yourself. As a leader of a spiritual community, these times happen to me. People have come and they have gone. And a lot of times while they're here, there have been disharmonies between people. And I have been in the position of one who needed to try to bring about some harmony. And so it's just, I have, you know, because of my position, it's on me to make an effort. And anybody that's known me for long has seen me go through these times when, well, I gird myself and we have a house meeting or whatever is called for in that situation, and I ask people to express themselves with each other, you know, to get to the problem, and I express myself in talking with them and try to help us all find a loving way to be together. And sometimes I've succeeded, and I'm not sure I have all the time. Mick, what do you think?
Well, again, you know, the intention is the most important thing, to make that effort. We can't control the way people respond to us. All we can do is intend to do something that is harmonious and reconciling, and then let that be bread upon the water and hope that it returns multiplied.
Well, you're not suggesting that you just, you know, speak up to people and give your opinion if it's not solicited, though, are you?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
All right. So only if it's asked for.
I would never encourage that. No, I think that this is mostly lonely work, and it doesn't ever get out into the public sphere. This is work that you're doing within yourself, for yourself, to get to know yourself better, and then to find ways to make yourself stronger. I think it's like a muscle. It's just like Jim does these repetitions all the time. He has light weight, but he believes that it helps his arthritis if he does, 75 repetitions 4 or 5 times a week of 4 different exercises that he does. And he's done this for years, for decades, and it seems to really help him out a lot. And whenever you're put in the situation of finding your heart closing, it's an exercise. It's lifting that weight of self-knowledge to be responsible to the self and to see if you can get that heart to come back open within yourself. Perfect example, I always bring it up, is road rage, because I guess, you know, we're driving at such fast speeds and people make split-second decisions, and a lot of times when somebody's cutting you off, I don't think they really mean to cut you off. They're just in such a hurry, and they don't see that there's half a mile behind you, that if they just wait until you get by, you know, they could come on in, no problem at all, but they can't. There's something, you know, I've got to get there, you know, there's something just pushing people these days. And so they really have to, you know, oh, there's room, I'll jump out, I'll blend in. But, you know, you have to stomp on the brakes in order to make that happen for the person. And that's been my experience so many times. And I think everybody that drives the expressways at least has that. And every time you have that knee-jerk reaction of, you son of a gun, you know. And, okay, working back to that attitude of there's room for him, it's all right, you know, I understand, I forgive. You know, I think forgiveness is a key word in there. And you really end up forgiving yourself, because after you've forgiven the person for having road rage, you're still the person that didn't behave the way you wanted to. You know, you didn't have that immediate understanding of, oh, yes, of course, that person was just in a hurry. It's all right. Nothing happened. We're all safe. You know, don't worry about it. Take it easy. Well, instead of that, you spend some time muttering. And the time that I spend muttering is time that I'm wasting, and I'm hurting myself. And so that irritates me, that, doggone it, I got upset with that person instead of, you know, having compassion. And I want to be a compassionate person. I really, really do. So it's about yourself mostly. 99% of peace in terms of spiritual work is peace within. It doesn't have anything to do with the world out there. It has to do with how you are able to keep your heart open.
Okay, this leads into this question. Well, let's see. Okay, I'm going to do this one, but then there's another one I want to make sure we get to today. All right? Okay, so I'm going to do this one because I think this segues into that very well. This is actually from a thread on the bringforth.org forum from Mimo Sabisk. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. I keep coming up against a conflict deep within the dregs of my mind, a paradoxical arrangement in which STO and STS are indistinguishable. Now, according to the raw material, the duality resolves itself in 6D because STS is thrown into confusion by the realization that we are all one. Extreme examples such as murder and slavery are generally easy to attribute to STS, although I can imagine situations in which violent action is used to protect either the self or others from wrongdoing, as Ross states, occurs in 4D and 5D. However, if one realizes that all beings are one, that there is truly only one self, then is not any action benefiting another in actuality benefiting another version of oneself? This seems the reason why the duality dissolves in 6D, though I would posit that the STO polarity would also be thrown into confusion for this reason. Maybe Ross simply had not reached this point of development and will pass through its own confused resolution of this duality prior to graduation to 7D in time for its harvest in 2.5 million years. To reiterate, if all are one, is not any action benefiting another ultimately self-serving? And likewise, is not any action that is selfish inherently benefiting all, based on the law of one? To restate another way, in realization of the law of one, how can there be a distinction between STO versus STS?
Okay, the distinction is in these chakras that are used to work the puzzle. In service to others polarity, the third density choice is between using the heart and skipping the heart. If you are going to be of service to others, your attempt is to open the heart, to springboard from the heart into those healing, teaching, artistic expressions of all kinds, passive radiation of the light, meditation, all of those energies that come to you when you have opened the heart, and then use the heart to springboard yourself into the higher chakra work and reaching the gateway to intelligent infinity by primarily keeping the heart open in all sorts of situations, and then using the higher chakras in order to communicate and to heal and to meditate and so forth. In the service to self polarity, the decision is made that the energies of love are not useful. You do not love people. You use people. You love yourself. You do not open your heart. You keep your heart closed, and you work from your will, from the yellow ray, from your the third chakra as opposed to the fourth. And you have a very, very strong red ray, very, very strong orange ray, very, very strong yellow ray. And you use that will to cause others to serve you. You see everybody as a pawn, as a possible use to you. And you consider that person in terms of his possible use to you. And if he's useful, you use him. If he's not useful to you, you disregard him. And you do not consider him as a human being even. He's not on your game board at all. So that is the difference between STO and STS as you make the choice between polarities in third density. In fourth and fifth densities, you persist in your choice as you go along. If you've graduated in service to others in third density, then you are set to go into positive fourth density and then positive fifth density, learning the positive use of love with your heart full open. And then as you use wisdom, as you explore wisdom, you are still leaving your heart wide open. And if you are graduating in a negative sense, you are working to refine your will and to become absolutely service to self, absolutely. The energies of your will are preternaturally strong. So the reason that service to others is sort of astonished and befuddled and stuck in sixth density, because they're thrown into confusion because they have been basing all of the work that they have done to perfect their love of themselves on a misconception, which is that the heart is not a useful chakra. They've not used that chakra at all. And when they find that they can get no further in the path of evolution until they're able to open the heart and switch polarities to positive polarity so that they can use the heart, they're thrown into confusion because they haven't studied how to do that. And they find that they want very much to do that. And the reason is often, I'm sure, very irritating to them, and they resist it for a long time. And that's because you hate to do something different when you've had such good luck with what you're doing, you know. I can you imagine somebody that's absolutely sure that he's right, and that what he has done is a beautiful thing. And all of a sudden he discovers, yeah, but you can't evolve anymore. You're stuck here until you accept the truth that you never would accept before. So they're stuck on a paradox. And that is why service to self and service to others is hugely different in the energies used. It's a matter of what chakras are used and what chakra you use to springboard yourself into the gateway to intelligent infinity, so that you are able to bring back those spiritual gifts that enable you to be more than you were, and to have a relationship with the one infinite creator. It's about relating to the creator more than anything else that, you know, the spiritual life is. In the end, everything is relating to the creator. And so there's a path of evolution that apparently is just the way things are, you know. Evolution has a path back to the creator, and at a certain point, you know, you're going to have to accept that the heart is true, that love is all that the poets say it is and more, and that to leave the heart out of the equation is to get yourself stuck and be unable in the end to come closer to the creator. So beyond that, there's the question of service to self and service to others being the single most difficult question raised in the Law of One. And that is because, looking at it from our point of view, it's a complete paradox. It doesn't make sense. It's counterintuitive. How can all things be one? It just doesn't make sense. How can it be true that there's a difference between service to self and service to others if, as, let me have a go at her, I suppose it's her, it's Mimosa Bisque. If Mimosa Bisque, really, I wonder what that would taste like. A mimosa is champagne and orange juice, right? So if you have a bisque, that would be a soup, a cream soup. So I'm trying to think now, what kind of soup would that make if you're using citrus? I get off on the strangest things. Anyway, it's a very interesting name. Mimosa Bisque is exactly right. If you serve others, you can't help but serve yourself. I have experienced that time and again. I have gotten thousands, I would say, of letters from people. I mean, they come in every day. And this is over a period of 30 years, you know, since my channeling became publicized. And people will write in and say, you know, it changed my life. And I am so grateful. And, you know, nothing made sense until I read the Kuo material, or I read the Law of One. And now, you know, I understand where I am. I understand where I'm going and what I need to do. And, you know, it's just my life makes sense. And I hear this over and over again. And I know that the material is very powerful. So obviously I'm a living example of somebody who is trying to serve others really hard, but who keeps getting served. You know, it would seem as if I might have even done the channeling because I wanted to have people write me thank you notes, which is not and never has been. I don't care. I'm totally a jerk and a bozo, and I'm not the one that should be thanked. The creator needs to be thanked for this channeling. I am just an instrument, and the only thing I can say I do is I try really hard to do an honest job, you know, when I tune myself up and I do the channeling. And I look forward to doing it once I get these back operations out of the way, hopefully this being the last, yes, 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 and I get back to channeling, you know, I will be doing the same thing that I've always done, which is doing the absolute best job I can do of being a translator of things that I pick up from spirit. And it's spirit that needs to be thanked. And the fact that there are people around me, because you can't do this alone. You need to have a group around you in order to, at least I do. I don't have the energy to bring this stuff through by myself. I float on the group energy to do it. So, no, I don't do it just so that I can get thanks. But that's what happens. I can't help it happening, and I'm delighted it's happening. It's thrilling. But at the same time, I own it. Yes, you can't serve others without being served yourself, and being served not just a little bit, but a huge amount. And alternatively, or, you know, oppositely, if you are serving yourself and you're part of a unified creation, then you're serving the Creator the best you know how as an advocate of service to self. It's your honest opinion this is the way to go, and the Creator thanks you for it. That's just so true. So, it's true both ways. So if you get stuck on that, you really can ponder it and ponder it and go crazy. So my advice to people is just to judge it in terms of heart. How big a part does heart play in your work? If you are attempting to keep your heart open, you are service to others, and that is so different from the energies of service to self. If you're trying to serve yourself, you have to make room, you know, space between yourself and everybody else, because you're using everybody else. You can't get close to other people if you're really service to self. You that would get in your way of using them. So you need to be a very cool cat, and you need to be very sharp and use people very cleverly. And usually, the sophisticated, the clever, and the intellectual, and that kind of word, you start going into those descriptions, and you get colder and colder and colder, you know, in describing the kind of person that you've got. And you're starting to describe entities that are often drawn to service to self, because it just seems that they're different than other people and they're better than other people. And so why shouldn't they serve themselves and use other people, because they have visions and they see more and you know, more than other people. And so, you know, the little guys better trust me, because I see more, I am right. And if you're my slave, I will bring you along behind me, and we will do great things. So the energies are so different that there's no mistaking the difference if you look at what's happening in your heart. If you're getting more and more open-hearted, and you're including and forgiving and opening to life like that, that's service to others. If you're contracting and using the energies of will and anger and so forth, and using other people as pawns, that's, you know, that's service to self. There's no heart in it. Make sense, Monica?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Excellent. Thank you, Carla.
There you go, yeah.
That was excellent. Okay, we have just a few minutes left, and we have a live caller. Hello, are you with us?
Deep Bridge has a triangular penis.
Who's this? Okay, we got our first prank phone call. All right, so much for that. I have no idea what that was. Okay, but he hung up. So, thank you, Carla. So really, you know, this question had been asked before. Someone said they felt almost guilty if they did something, even though their intention was to serve others, if they actually benefited as well. And yet Ra actually said that in order to be harvestable to 4D positive, one must also love themselves. So it seemed paradoxical. So I think you just really nailed it. You gave an excellent explanation. So it's not about whether we benefit or not, or whether we are being served. It's whether the heart is open.
Yeah.
So we actually, it is fine to serve yourself and love yourself along with serving others.
It's necessary. I think the energies of love, forgiveness, compassion, and so forth begin with forgiving yourself, because we're all bozos, and we have to forgive ourselves for that before we can go on. And I think that in the process of learning to know yourself, you discover that about yourself. I mean, it's hard to miss. So, and no matter, I'm not talking that I'm a bad person. I mean, I try really hard, but it's just that we're all bozos and we're human beings and we screw up. So, yeah. Okay, which one did you want to tackle in a couple of minutes.
Well, I wanted to do Herusia's question because it's been, you know, from a few weeks ago. I'm going to read it super quickly. I understand other channeled material isn't really discussed, and if that's the case, okay, we can skip over this. The Cassiopeians talk about half of humanity sharing one oversoul, in a sense, and that they are not in possession of true souls, but rather operate by mimicking the higher rays and solely operating from the lower rays. They call them organic portals. This, to me, does mesh in with the idea that the majority of recent humans on Earth are recent 2D, graduating to 3D, and thus are developing the lower rays. Carla, could you do a breakdown of the seven sub-densities. Maybe we might leave that part till later, but whatever you want to address, Carla.
Okay. Is that last paragraph, I have addressed the seven rays in my book, and they are the seven chakras, and talk about what is developed in each of the chakras. And I really encourage you to buy the book. It's called Living the Law of One, 101, The Choice. And my hope was when I wrote it that I was quickly going to write 102, the lower chakras, and 103, the higher chakras. And I haven't done that yet because I got sidetracked with these back problems. So hopefully I'll get back to that. So 101 is my soul child of that grand scheme. And I think that it does a good job of talking about the sub-densities and just identifying by chakra. Now, with the other thing, you're right, I don't like to talk about other people's channeling at all. However, I can talk about the concept that there would be people walking around that are supposedly human but that aren't really human and they're simply organic portals. I think that what I would identify as an organic portal is one who has become addicted. To an extent that they are no longer living their lives, and the addiction is living their lives, and they are simply the body that carries that will to have the next drink, the next puff, the next huff, the next shot, the next sexual encounter. There are so many ways that people can be addicted, and there are many, many 12-step programs for them. And I would say that people do give up their humanity to addiction. But short of that, I do not believe that there are people on Earth that are less than fully human. I believe that there are many, many old souls here and that we are all ripe, very ripe, to be harvested, full of wisdom, full of years, full of incarnations and understandings. We're all old souls. That's the way I feel about it.
Wow, you sure pulled that off.
Thank you.
I'm impressed. We made it with a minute to spare. Okay, thank you, Carla. Thank you, Jim. You've been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Record and Jim McCarty. We are here every week, every Friday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. We will be here next week. Carla's surgery has been postponed till towards the end of April, so we'll be here next week and I guess the week after. I'm not looking at a calendar.
Right.
All right.
Until the 20-somethings.
Okay. And please check out llresearch.org. Check out the transcripts from the Law of One material and lots of other cool stuff. And bringforth.org. That's bring4th.org. And we will see you next week.